This episode of Talk of the Devils is sponsored once more by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit 1 million orders phase. Yep, Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling ETH style turtleneck sweaters or blueprints for brand new stadiums, Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to Talk of the Devils, you can sign up for our $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/reddevils, all in lowercase without any spaces. So go to shopify.com/reddevils to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/reddevils.
The Athletic.
This is Talk of the Devils, the Manchester United podcast from The Athletic, and well, that boy Ronaldo has done it again.
Constant Manchester United pressure, less than 10 minutes to go. Shaw, into Ronaldo! Cristiano Ronaldo in the Champions League again for Manchester United! You cannot keep this man down in this competition! And from 2-0 down, Manchester United lead 3-2! And who else but CR7, Cristiano Ronaldo!
Yes, Manchester United have done it again as well, haven't they? Another dramatic comeback in the Champions League, this time against Atalanta. But how many questions has that game brought up? My goodness. We're going to do our best to get through them over the course of this podcast. And I think we'll probably still be left with more questions. That just seems to be the way it's going at the moment. And later on as well, we'll be previewing the small matter of Manchester United against Liverpool this weekend too. But first, let's react to that crazy night. Right, with us today then, two people who were lucky enough to be covering the match at Old Trafford last night. The Athletic's United correspondent, Laurie Whitwell. Hello, Laurie.
Hello, Ian. You okay?
Still smiling, I see. Absolutely. And the editor of United We Stand, of course, as well, and Athletic contributor, Andy Mitten. Andy, did you get a chippy with the Atalanta fans last night, I saw?
I was walking around the ground speaking to fans before the game and asking them various questions and sampling the mood, and I walked past a chippy and it was full of people singing. And I thought, I've never seen football fans singing in the chippy before. And they were Italians. So I went up to one of them and said to him in English, how a form of English which I thought an Italian would understand. And I had a chat with this lad. He said, I don't speak English, but I managed to get his prediction.
Today, Manchester, Atlanta.
Atlanta.
One zero. I see you in Bergamo.
Right, let's get into it then. It was a conflicting night of confliction, with conflicting halves, conflicting emotions, conflicting verdicts. Laurie, what side of the conflict were you on?
Well, this is kind of where the piece that I wrote into the early hours comes from. In the
you filed at 4 a.m, I believe.
Yeah, 4 a.m. Yeah, I'm a slow writer. I like to kind of just sort of.
You type with one finger and your tongue out.
I type like Andy speaks in Italian to Atalanta fans, very slowly. My main point is that yeah, there is loads of conflict around United, isn't there? There's a culture war really amongst fans. You see it online, and for the first time probably that I can remember, you could feel it in Old Trafford as well. My overall impression was actually it was a good performance. I know that Solskjaer's been pilloried for suggesting that the first half was actually, you know, okay, but when you look at the, it should have been 2-2 really. You know, when you look at the chances, you know, Rashford's, you know, one-on-one, those runs in behind. We had that chat, didn't we, Ian, sort of on WhatsApp, sort of saying, you know, is Rashford worth keeping on because he's getting these chances, or is he not quite at the level, you know, after his long layoff for his finishing? he just needed to get his shooting boots sorted, didn't he? And that second half finish was immaculate. But, you know, United were creating chances. I was quite enjoying some of the attacking moves that they were putting together. Yeah, obviously, defensively, again, two pretty shambolic goals to concede. Atalanta, the first one, you knew that's the kind of style they can produce, the wing-back overlapping. The set-piece one, I don't know what's going on there, and that's a real issue they need to address. But I came away from it ultimately thinking, that's a stirring comeback. I just enjoyed it. I thought, great Old Trafford night under the floodlights in Europe.
Yeah, to repeat a line in your piece, no matter the problem, you can still enjoy a wild victory as witnessed by Old Trafford on Wednesday night. Andy, what was it like to be in there?
It was brilliant, and Laurie's right, the sense of occasion. We don't have to look at the bigger picture just to enjoy a night of football. Atalanta were worthy opponents. They were missing players. They showed how capable they were in the first half. I thought the goalkeeper was excellent. I like seeing different styles of football at Old Trafford. I didn't like watching Villarreal, but I acknowledge that they're bringing something else which is different to what you see in the Premier League. The atmosphere was fantastic. You had the Red Army. They had two new huge flags in there, which finally they got in. There were a couple of issues which needed ironing out. I'm glad that UEFA helped out there to get that sorted out. And they created a din. They were singing for Ollie before the game. The support never wavered. There were some boos at halftime. Ollie walked past and he sort of raised his arms to ask for more support. It was a bit of a bold thing to do. I don't know whether it was the right thing to do, but it probably was. When I was watching, I'm thinking, you're asking for more support here, but do you deserve that? And he asked for it. He got it right throughout the second half. Clearly, when the goals are flying in, you have a natural knock-on effect from that anyway. It was an exhilarating night of European football. I really enjoyed it. You got taken for a ride. At times, you're thinking, where on earth is this going? 2-0 down at half time. As Laurie said, I don't think United played that badly in the first half. Clearly, the defence were at fault for the goals. But up front, United were pretty woeful in the first half. And then just got more clinical in the second half. Great for Marcus to score. Thought Paul Pogba did well when he came on. Spoke to him after the game. He was pretty smiley. He doesn't tend to give much away in live TV interviews. Spoke to Ollie after the game. He rightly praised and name-checked the Red Army. And again, we shouldn't take this for granted. Throughout the 90s and noughties, when Manchester United were usually excellent, the atmosphere suffered. It was a major issue for a lot of fans. The club didn't really care. They didn't listen to the fans. They took out the vocal heartland of the Stretford End and replaced it with an executive section. So it's really good now that you see in this atmosphere. It's not happening by chance. It's happening because of the efforts of thousands of people. And the end result is that when I spoke to Atalanta players after the game last night, unprompted, they're talking about the noise in Old Trafford. As a Manchester lad, that sounds fantastic. And I know there's loads of issues with Manchester United at the moment. Some people will never be happy. And there are far more issues at the moment than normal. We've seen that with results and with performances. But if you could not enjoy last night, even if you're an Atalanta fan, you're not a football fan.
No, I agree. Absolutely. You mentioned there quite a lot about what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer said to you in the interview. Well, let's hear his interview with BT Sport now, because he was very, very complimentary, as you've been saying, Andy, about the support that United got inside Old Trafford last night.
Ollie, I think you'd have to give him a wave to keep him quiet.
They are a big, big part of this club. You know, the singing section here today was that kept the players going, kept everyone going in the belief.
But this team is quite remarkable for comebacks. You can't keep doing this to yourselves.
No, but that's, you know, we've got a habit of doing this at this club. But as I said, I thought we played well.
And they looked like they were playing for you. I know it's been a rocky old week.
Don't even start.
That's true, though, because you can see a collective character.
Don't disrespect the players. They play for Man United.
Yeah, Andy, he couldn't have said much more about how much he appreciated the support last night. I mean, it made a huge difference, didn't it?
Yeah, he was actually name-checking. He name-checked Pete Boyle to me. He said, I saw Big Pete in there. I thought, that's a bit out of order. He's not big. He's lost loads of weight. He's been running every day since lockdown. Would you like it being called Big Ollie, the wrestler from Norway? So I think Ollie needs to apologise to Mr. Boyle there. But the sentiment was absolutely right. The support was unwavering. I don't think it was quite as loud as Villarreal, if I'm honest. But then I wasn't measuring it. I was watching a game of football, but that would be my observation. Someone might prove me wrong there. I don't know what you think, Larry.
Well, I was just thinking when you mentioned Ollie the wrestler from Norway, his dad's a Greco-Roman wrestler, isn't he? So,
yeah, you know, he is.
If the shoe fits.
Yeah. Is that right? I never knew
that. Yeah.
His dad was a really high-level wrestler.
Blimey. Well, every day's a school day, isn't it? Well, in terms of that then, Des Kelly needs to watch his questions, doesn't he, Laurie? You know, suggesting that he might have got a set of players who weren't playing for him anymore. I mean, if anyone sort of doubted that second half was a real answer to that, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I watched that and people had said, because we were in the stadium and people said, oh, Ollie's had a bit prickly in the BT Sport interview. And I did watch it back and he obviously was bristling at the question. But I think, I mean, I used to work with Des at the Mail and he's a very affable guy. And I think he meant, you know, it was kind of almost saying that they are clearly with you, you know, in that way. But Ollie, even the inference that they might not be, it was something that he kicks back against.
Part of me feels it was a fair question, considering the way that Leicester had gone and the way that first half had gone as well. That's maybe the first time that you sort of saw that reaction in terms of people questioning whether they were still playing for him. Because it's not really been sort of fully doubted that as certainly as after that Leicester game. So I think maybe even if he did mean the question, it would have been all right, wouldn't it?
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. And yeah, you're not the only one that looked at that game and thought, what's going on here with the players, the effort, the kind of walking that we saw at the King Power Stadium. You know, and maybe, you know, those grumbles, maybe there are legitimate grumbles from players. Not in terms of, I think all of them, you know, like Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, but I think I wonder if some of them, you know, question whether he is, you know, that top level elite. Like we all do, you know, he hasn't got the pedigree that Jurgen Klopp, Pep Guardiola, Thomas Tuchel, you know, arrived at their clubs with. So that they're sort of legitimate questions. But I think you look at the way they committed to the task, you know, obviously they went 2-0 down. That's not a great look. But it was organisation really. It wasn't commitment. And the way they responded to that with the character, you know, with the running, with the energy, and then they got the extra, you know, impetus off the bench with Paul Pogba and Edinson Cavani. It was a real proper performance for a manager, and you know, I think that's what you'll expect now from now on. I don't think we'll see a return to that Leicester game, but I mean, there's been plenty of twists and turns in this story already. But it was, I think you're right. I think it was a performance that actually answered those kind of doubts.
Yeah, it certainly felt like that. I mean, Rio Ferdinand said on BT afterwards, Andy, that United need to use that second half as a reference point moving forward. I've seen the phrase everywhere, papering over the cracks, papering over the cracks, papering over the cracks. But they keep doing this. Like, is it sustainable? We seem to ask this question all the time. Is it sustainable to go behind?
No, it's not. And another lack of clean sheet, that's a worry as well. And
just on the clean sheets, actually, I looked this up, right? Manchester United's last clean sheet at Old Trafford in the Premier League was March.
And that's not good enough.
March. And in 21 games in the Premier League since, they've kept two clean sheets.
And David De Gea kept United in the game with that double save after 71 minutes. I do think that United deserved to win the game. I think when the team are not doing well, you get a lot of talk, and it's our job to talk, to write. But when it's coming from the players or the manager, there's a little bit of same old bouncing back. You know, we know this isn't good enough. The only way that they can change the mood is by winning matches and playing well. The issues have not gone away. Liverpool are still clear favourites to beat United at Old Trafford on Sunday. And United, I wouldn't say they got away with it, but it was such an open, unpredictable game. Atalanta's defence probably suited United's style of play. I wouldn't be surprised if in 2 weeks we're talking and the mood is much flatter again, because results have not gone Manchester United's way. Then again, it's been an unpredictable, largely enjoyable ride under Ollie. But people are talking and speculating because things have not been good enough. The doubts about Ollie, some of them are absolutely legitimate. And we've discussed them on this podcast. He's coming up to nearly 3 years in charge now. United have not won any trophies under him. He's done well up until this point, but expectations, not unreasonably so, are higher this year. Look at the squad that he's got. Has he got the best out of that squad so far? No.
I think it's a lack of control as well, Laurie, isn't it? I mean, that's sort of what the theme I've sort of got out the last few matches. They've won 3 of the last 8. And we'll go back to it again. It's an 89th minute winner from Jesse Lingard, followed by an even later penalty save from Mark Noble by David De Gea in that game. It's a last second winner from Cristiano Ronaldo against Villarreal at Old Trafford. And then it's that turnaround last night. I mean, the last time United won comfortably was Newcastle, Ronaldo's debut.
And even that one, to be fair, 1-1 for a section of time, and Newcastle were attacking pretty well. I weirdly ranked the West Ham performance as better than the Newcastle performance, just because I know it took a late winner from Lingard, but I felt there was actually control in that game where West Ham's chances were pretty minimal, whereas, and you know, United, I think United should have been, you know, clear before the end, whereas in all the other games, you know, United have coughed up chances. Does Solskjaer know his best team? What will he field against Liverpool? What are the balances like there? I mean, I do think having Marcus Rashford back is a major, major thing, because he just offers something different in terms of those runs in behind. We spoke to Bruno Fernandes after the game, who was man of the match, which a lot of people were like, how on earth is he man of the match? Because the amount of times he gave it away in that first half, and you know, you're looking at it going, the weight of pass, figure it out. But then also, he created a chance for Fred. Second half, he creates the goal for Marcus Rashford. He creates two chances for Cristiano Ronaldo.
Something else conflicting about last night.
I think Bruno absolutely epitomises the whole point, though, in the control. So he, and I asked him, I'd said to him in a sort of the most kind way that I could. I mean, who am I to, you know, discuss Bruno Fernandes's, you know, technique on the pitch? But I was sort of saying, can you just explain the bad passes, but then also the really good passes? How does that work? And he basically just said, you know, I take risks on the pitch. You know, sometimes I take too many risks, but I respect my strikers too much to not try and give them the chance to score goals.
I think Bruno's really interesting, because I thought he was poor in the first half without intending to be. He just couldn't find his radar. He was trying passes which were just not coming off. And that's unlike him. He got much better in the second half, but then you could say that about most of the players. I was doing ratings, and it was difficult, even though United didn't play that badly in the first half, to find many reasons for optimism. And I get the reason why Bruno was baffled to be named man of the match, but who was? I know internally they feel that Fred and Scott McTominay did exactly what was asked of them, so they definitely impressed. Internally, Ronaldo did what he did. Marcus, it was great for him to score that goal, but he was still finding his way as too. But Pogba did well when he came on. But yeah, Bruno was pretty frustrating to watch in that first half, because it just wasn't happening. He was losing the ball more often than it was getting to the man. But then in the second half, one thing I like about him is he keeps trying. He always tries. He never stops trying. He always demands the ball. He doesn't hide away. But was he the standout man of the match? I don't think he was.
One thing about last night, which has sort of got lost really in all the excitement, was just how important that victory was for Manchester United's season in the Champions League, and indeed sort of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's prospects of keeping hold of the job, because to go out of this group would have been extremely damaging, and to lose that game last night would have given United a massive uphill task of getting out of it. I mean, essentially that comeback took United from the bottom of the group to the top of the group, and now they can go to Bergamo full of confidence as opposed to full of trepidation. I mean, Laurie, it could be a turning point in the season. I don't really want to say that, because I feel like we've had a few of them already, but
yeah, you'll give yourself whiplash, you know, look at all these turning points.
But the energy that a result like that brings and a finale like that brings, I mean, this is really something that I feel like I've said this before as well, that they have to build on now, surely.
Momentum's huge. I mean, I felt the momentum in that second half was just only going one way. You know, I texted Mediter at half time. Well, out after the second half, saying,
I wondered how long it was going to take you to get this in.
3-2 incoming. I'm getting it out. Every time I make a right prediction, I'm saying it. And every time I make a horrendous prediction, I'm just leaving it to the dustbin and never repeating it. We said this after the Villarreal game, though. I mean, what a stirring way to win that game it was. You know, 95th minute, Old Trafford bouncing, and then, you know, it sort of frittered away. So was it different for you watching it? You were at home, right, Ian?
Yeah.
So, I mean, because obviously me and Andy, you can get carried away almost, or sort of whipped up by that atmosphere, and does it blind you a little bit? But I don't know, what was it like for you?
No, I mean, I got carried away as well. And it was interesting, actually, because we're going to play his comments in a moment, but Paul Scholes in the studio down in London, totally detached, really, from Old Trafford, was very cold, very cold. You sort of heard the difference with Robbie Savage. Say what you want about Robbie Savage, but he definitely got carried away with the atmosphere last night, no doubt about that. Finishing off with two words, Viva Ronaldo, good night. That's for you, Robbie. But still, it just sort of shows how he sort of lost himself in the minute, in the moment. And Scholes was totally different. And at the full-time whistle, like, instantly, he gave an extremely cold verdict on what he'd just seen. So, yeah, I do think maybe being inside the ground and being away from the ground, you could probably have a different sort of sense of how the game had gone, and you're not as close to the emotion and the atmosphere inside. But I'll go back to it. You said it before. The half-time reaction to that whistle being blown, the initial sort of murmurs and grumblings and boos being drowned out by the cheers from the Red Army in the corner, sort of summed up the feeling, didn't it? And that, like you said, it's the first time that inside the stadium you've sort of felt that clear sort of conflict between two different reactions. Right, let's hear from Paul Scholes then, because we're going to tee up the Liverpool game this weekend, and actually Paul's doing his best to make us all worry.
I looked at that game thinking about Liverpool on Sunday. Maybe it's the wrong thing to do, thinking about Manchester City, because I thought in that first half United were all over the place. They were disjointed. They had the two midfield players playing on their own. Now, if you do that against Manchester City or Liverpool, half time, it'll be 3 or 4 nil. You'll be out of the game. You're not coming back. And now everyone will get a little bit carried away with this euphoria. Now, will he play that way on Sunday against Liverpool? It was that brilliant. It was that good. Everyone's smiling. Everyone's happy. Go and do that on Sunday against Liverpool. See what happens. Well, imagine Jurgen Klopp at home watching that game in the first half, rubbing his hands together.
Right, well, if Paul Scholes has not made you worry enough, we've got a visitor now from up the East Lancs Road, crossing the divide to preview the match against Liverpool this weekend. It's Si Hughes, who, of course, covers Liverpool for The Athletic and often pops up on their podcast, The Red Agenda, as well. Simon, thanks for doing this. Scholes was quite strong in his opinions last night on BT Sport, especially about the weekend. Just to quote him, "Go and do that against Liverpool on Sunday. See what happens." Imagine Jurgen Klopp watching that at home, rubbing his hands together. Do you agree?
Well, I mean, I think Liverpool are a better team than Atalanta. Obviously, Atalanta are a very good side. Liverpool lost two last season at Anfield. But I just think the way Liverpool are playing at the moment, with particularly the forward line, three out of the four are right on form. And if they're given the space to play that the Atalanta forward line was given last night, you know, Liverpool start games pretty quickly. I think at Old Trafford on Sunday, you know, they will need to sort of have a go from the beginning, really, to try and get on top of United, given sort of the prevailing mood at the club. So I think United will have to be defending well from the very beginning. So yeah, I do think his comments are right, but I also think that Klopp will have seen sort of the atmosphere at Old Trafford and possibly been spooked a little bit by that, because, I mean, from my experience, whenever Liverpool goes to Old Trafford, you know, the atmosphere does crank up a few levels, you know, and Liverpool's record at Old Trafford hasn't been great over the last sort of 5 to 10 years. So I think particularly Klopp's teams haven't really performed, other than the game last season when there was no crowd. I think they find it quite hard on the size of the pitch. It always seems a bigger pitch, Old Trafford. I don't know whether it actually is, but it just seems that way. And obviously, the way Liverpool play with the pressing, I just think that Klopp won't be thinking, oh yeah, that's a gimme. That they'll still know that there's a lot to do. But I can understand the worry from a United perspective. If Liverpool's forwards turn up, it's going to be very tough for them.
I sort of go back to, I think it was the 2019 game where United and Liverpool ended up drawing 1-1. I think Liverpool had won every single game up until that point. And it was similar to this in a sense where, Simon, everyone was building up how good Liverpool were and the sort of bad moment that Manchester United were in. And United ended up producing something that sort of shocked everyone. How do you feel about the game this weekend, and how do the fan base feel about the United game this weekend?
It's interesting you mention that, because I remember at the time thinking exactly the same thing, that you know, on the day, Man United, I've got the players that can deliver performances that on any given day can beat some of the top teams, I think. But then over the course of the season, what they don't have is what Liverpool do have, is that balance in the team. and, you know, without using too many sort of football manager terminology, but the structure and the identity, you know, I think Liverpool have got a stronger identity than United on the pitch, and something that they know they can go back to if it's not working. I thought in that game that you mentioned, I thought United probably should have won the game. Obviously, Liverpool got a late equaliser, didn't they, Adam Lallana?
Paul Scholes said that United should go to a three midfield, which maybe would counter what Liverpool have got to offer. I just wonder, Si, I watched the game against Atletico. I've obviously watched Liverpool this season. Mo Salah seems in ridiculous form in terms of his dribbling ability. But on the flip side, is Virgil van Dijk the player that he once was? Because that's the area that I look at and think, you know, for example, Marcus Rashford's had success against Liverpool in the past with those runs in behind. Atletico look to have success there. Is there any concern there from Liverpool?
Yeah, well, I think Salah's game has developed over the last, you know, 2 or 3 years. He's not the player that he was when he scored, you know, 43, 44 goals in his first season. He's a different player now, I think. He's got more to his game. I think Luke Shaw's had a decent record against him. You know, he's had some good games against him, which I think will count on the day. But I agree, I don't think Van Dijk is up to the level that he was before he got injured. And there's been a couple of occasions already this season where he's looked vulnerable, including against Atletico on Tuesday night. But despite saying that, I still think that Van Dijk gives the Liverpool team a lot of belief.
There's two things you mentioned. The size of the Old Trafford pitch, that's something Jamie Carragher always talked about. He said United could hit us. And conversely, it's something Wayne Rooney always talked about at Anfield, saying it was much tighter. And also the atmosphere. The best atmosphere I've seen between United and Liverpool in recent years at Anfield was the Europa League game. And that's when Liverpool were far from great. The Kop was absolutely rocking that night. And I see Manchester United as being at a similar stage. Clearly, Liverpool are a more complete team at the moment. You're in form. You've got better individuals in form at the moment. I think a lot of people would say you've got a better manager as well. I think the atmosphere at Old Trafford has definitely got a part to play in it. I think there'll be people ready to write off United at the moment, and yet I wouldn't be stunned if it was 0-0. I suspect that Ollie will go for that sort of Fred McTominay, if Fred's fit, to try and contain Liverpool, because you've got better players.
People listening to this will be doing so in all different parts of the world with greater knowledge, less knowledge of the Manchester United and Liverpool rivalry. Andy, for United fans, I know you've written about it. Is this still the game that everyone looks forward to the most?
I would say yes. Not all my mates would agree with me. I think that United and Liverpool are, by a distance, the two biggest English football teams and football clubs with global support. Similarities in the history with tragedy as well as success. So many similarities and so many things in common that we often don't like to admit it. I think the two cities, the rivalry, it's a social, it's a cultural one. It's set up as the perfect football rivalry, really. Liverpool are clearly in a very strong position at the moment. But for me, Manchester United against Liverpool is the biggest game in English football. And Liverpool are Manchester United's bigger rivals. I've got mates who say, nah, it's City, I hate them more. And I've got one or two who used to say it was Leeds United. And then I've spoken to players. I remember speaking to Roy Keane a lot in the noughties, and he said, you know, I understand why you lot say it's Liverpool, but for us it's Arsenal. So from a playing perspective, it's whoever are the best team at the moment. I'd be interested to see what Liverpool players say at the moment, or United's players, but more so Liverpool players, because they'd probably say that Manchester City were a bigger rival to them. But no, it's the two Reds from these two cities, which punch well above their demographics globally in terms not just of sport, but music. You can look at similar-sized cities around the world. They're nowhere near as well known as Manchester and Liverpool. And football is a major, major reason as a part of that, and music as well, but I'd say it's mainly football.
And Si, Andy alluded to it there, really. You know, you've had title tussles often in recent years with City, but is the United game still the match that everyone looks forward to the most?
I must say I dread losing to Everton more, just because you'll feel it more the following Monday. You know, if
it's the same sort of thing that Andy's been referring to there with City, isn't it?
Yeah. That's the only reason why. But the strange thing with Liverpool United is, I mean, you sort of mentioned then about like the about sort of the title tussles with City. Like I've been researching it this week and writing about it a little bit. I mean, there haven't been many occasions when Liverpool and United have gone head-to-head at the top. You know, it's been so close. I mean, I'd say 08, 09, you know, was a title race, but Liverpool, for the second half of the season, were chasing United for a long time, and it never felt like Liverpool were in control of it. Maybe because it's been sort of 10 years. Obviously, United haven't won the title since 2013, and in the time that Liverpool have been competing for the title, United haven't really been in the conversation that much. So maybe it has lost a little bit of edge, I think, for some people. But for me, it's still, I mean, I grew up in the unfortunate decades in the 1990s when United were just winning absolutely everything in sight, and Liverpool were just always felt like they were miles behind. So
it wasn't that bad, Sam.
Well, I was thinking about that again. I mean, I was thinking about 96, 97. When, you know, United go to Anfield with, was it 4 games to go? And 1-3-1, and Liverpool won that game. I think they'd have gone level on points with United, albeit United would have had a game in hand. I mean, that would have really taken it down to the wire that day. But it's one of the strange quirks of the rivalry that, despite sort of the intensity of it, there's never been that level of competition where they've both been right at the very top until, you know, the last couple of days and competing for the same trophies at exactly the same time. It's like, as Andy said there, I can understand why for Roy Keane, he would say that about Arsenal, because Liverpool, it was always like the grudge match, but they were ultimately keep competing with Arsenal, weren't they? You know, throughout that period, they were the ones who were giving them the most problems. The managers hated each other. You know, the players didn't like each other. I do sense for the Liverpool players, as Andy says, I think City seems to be, for them, you know, there's obviously a lot of Brazilian players who seem to semi-like each other, I think. It's about time Liverpool and United got it together at the top. I think that's what I'm saying, and have a right old go at it.
Amen to that, Simon, definitely. I would say good luck and enjoy the weekend, but I don't really mean it. But thank you very much for coming on. I do mean that. Brilliant to have you.
Nice one.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
We're going to say goodbye to Andy Mitten as well. He's rushing off now to go and speak to Brian Robson, which, Laurie, I think is a decent excuse, isn't it?
We'll let him off, I suppose. Listen, you know, Robbo, you know, we're talking about central midfielders. What would he do in the current United team, eh?
Yeah. Well, he wasn't your pick, was he? Roy Keane was your pick the other week.
True. An embarrassment of riches back in the central midfield. But, yeah, Andy and him will have a great chat. I look forward to reading what he comes out with.
Yeah, that'll be on The Athletic in the coming days and weeks, I'm sure. Laurie, What's Andy been up to lately, do you know?
Well, you know how he's rushing off to do this Brian Robson thing? He's also rushing off on Sunday after the game. I don't know if you've heard this.
Fill us in.
We were both at Lee Sports Village yesterday for the Youth League, UEFA Youth League against Atalanta, which was another barnstorming game. Actually, that was a 4-2 win. Some great goals there for the young lads and a good crowd in attendance. And he was telling me about his weekend where, obviously, he's come across from Barcelona to you know, watch United a couple of times. And then apparently, this is what he says, the best way for him to get back to Barcelona is via Ibiza. On Sunday night, so after United have beaten Liverpool at Old Trafford on Sunday, he's going to get on a plane straight to Ibiza, and apparently there's some closing parties. So he's going to some closing parties in Ibiza. He lands at like midnight or something, straight out on the sesh, and then he's going to go back to Barcelona after that. He says that's the most simple way of doing things. I think he might have sort of figured out himself.
I wondered why he was texting me asking if I knew anyone who sold glow sticks. I had no idea what he was talking about.
He says he's still a top raver. He says that the parties go on till 5 a.m, so he's going to get in there at 1 and he's going to be the last man standing.
Is he not a bit old for this now?
No, you can be any age in Ibiza, can't you?
Just go and lose yourself. Andy, if you're listening back to this, go and have a wonderful time. Go and party for all of us. Hopefully the result means that your arms are in the air all night long. Right, we need to round up any other business as always on Talk of the Devils. And it's not just any other business, Laurie, is it? It's a really important piece that you've been writing along with some of the other Athletic guys. It's on The Athletic at the minute. I'm going to read the title out, actually, because I think it's pretty hard-hitting and powerful. Putting a bomb through football, Man United vice chair Ed Woodward's role in the Super League. Just fill us in a little bit.
Yeah, so we've done a series of pieces reflecting on 6 months since the Super League happened, which obviously was a huge event in British football, world football, really. Caused a lot of division, a lot of conflict, and it's still rumbling on, really, isn't it? You know, is the Super League going to come back? What's FIFA's role? What's UEFA's role? There's all kinds of stuff going on. So it's still a very live issue. So we kind of wanted to do, from a United perspective, a reflection on what Ed Woodward's role was within it all. You know, it's kind of been the source of quite a lot of intrigue because there's been different versions of what happened come out in terms of how engaged he was, in terms of whether he was doing the Glazers' bidding for them, and actually when push came to shove, he realised he couldn't support the bid, or actually was it that he resigned after seeing the rage that came out from fans of the Super League and the fact that the players themselves had some very strong words on the subject. So yeah, it addresses all those things. Hopefully we shine some new light on the situation. There's a couple of interesting little bits that come out in terms of, for example, the Zoom call that Ed Woodward had with the players on the Monday. You know, we're told that Luke Shaw was basically leading that, very instrumental in putting the players' point of view across. Very strong in terms of what he thought United had treated them like.
I'm still surprised by that it was
Luke
him.
Shaw. Well, this is the thing. He's obviously...
It's good, but I'm surprised it's him.
I think you could see it in his statement that he released later on the Tuesday once it had all fallen apart. And he was really considered. And he's grown into a really important part of United's squad, not just on the pitch, but you know, around it. You know, he's a guy that is engaged and kind of, I think, feels affinity with, you know, match going fans. You know, his family goes to every game. You know, he's a good guy, I think. And so he was, you know, we're told, you know, sources say that he felt that they would have been treated like assets rather than human beings. Bruno Fernandes is another one that came out that was very strong in that meeting. And we've even been told that he actually would have, you know, he's privately said that he would have pushed to leave if they'd have gone through with it, because he felt that the fact of no relegation was just beyond the pale. You know, so if United were signed up to it, he didn't want to be a part of it, which, you know, strong. So this is the kind of emotion that was there at the time and that still sort of lingers. There's more sort of levity involved in it, in that Ed Woodward obviously met Dan Rosenfeld, who is number 10's chief of staff on the Wednesday. And this is kind of a crucial meeting, because that was, you know, 3 days before the Super League launch. You know, United and government say that they were there to talk about fans returning to stadiums because of COVID regulations. It's a bit confusing because the Premier League weren't notified, and would he really have a meeting with that level of government official before such a huge launch and not talk about the launch that, you know, he was obviously working on? So we talk about the reaction amongst the Super League clubs to, you know, that sort of late part of the week where, you know, perhaps a couple more clubs that were on the edge actually went, yeah, no, we'll go for it. But he also met Boris Johnson briefly in a corridor of Downing Street. It was a quick conversation, and one of the things that Ed Woodward mentioned was the fact that he'd actually bought a charity drawing done by Boris Johnson at auction, which, you know, amused me. I wasn't aware of it, but then you go online and you see that Boris Johnson draws London buses. You know, he does some sketches. Right. So we go into a little bit of, yeah, what happens next? So who's going to take over? When's Ed going to resign properly? When's he going to step down? What's the kind of takeover, the changing of the reins been like? You know, we're told that Richard Arnold is being primed. You know, he's the managing director of United. He's the kind of commercial brains. he's known the Glazers for a long time, trusted. He's known Ed Woodward for a long time, and Ed Woodward's had a role in you know, picking his successor. So, yeah, it addresses all those things. There's loads in there. Hopefully people enjoy it and kind of come away with it, sort of learning something and having a bit of insight from it all.
Yeah, that article's up on The Athletic at the moment. Remember, you can still get a 33% discount off a subscription as well. Go to theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod. Even that article's a good reason to go and do that, to be fair. Right, Laurie, before you go, this is a really key question. We've asked some massive questions on Talk of the Devils today, but I think this is probably up there as the most important. What's a scalene triangle?
So, right, last night when I'm in my sort of haze of trying to, you know, avoid falling asleep at the laptop and...
You're doing a bit of geometry.
Have a bit of creative writing. Well, I did maths at A-level, so I've got... There's some flickers of what went down. I don't even think you need to know what a scalene triangle is for A-level maths, but I was just trying to think...
Say. I was,
sorry.
I thought it might be a bit more technical than triangles.
In my attempt to, you know, have some kind of creativity to this idea that United's shape lacked balance, I thought, what is the shape that has the least amount of balance to it? And I think it's a scalene triangle. All sides are unequal, different angles. That was my... I originally thought rhombus, but I think rhombus is kind of actually... There is a bit of...
Who does he play for?
He's good with both feet.
Left. Defensive midfielder?
I've heard whispers.
Wow.
Get him in.
Yeah, if you have no idea what I'm talking about, go and read Laurie's piece reflecting on last night's turnaround against Atalanta. Brilliant. All the big questions getting asked on Talk of the Devils. Scalene triangle. A-level maths. Wow. Laurie, thank you so much for joining us. Andy, thank you to you as well. He's probably in Ibiza by now, isn't he? Bless him. And Si as well. That was interesting, wasn't it? He sort of made me worry a bit more about Sunday, and then equally it undid as he sort of went through that Virgil van Dijk's not quite as good and that they've been having problems conceding the type of chances that Manchester United might be able to create. So you just never know, do you? Either way, we'll be back on Monday, of course, to review that game against Liverpool. But until then, thank you for listening to Talk of the Devils, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
The Athletic.